You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator, and it's your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. And nonprofit organizations are a bit more complex than some people give them credit for. We think of them as these simple entities that people band together to try to get something meaningfully done in the community. And that's true, but they can be a lot more complex. And we've developed, fortunately, in our country, an infrastructure to help support the sustenance and the success of nonprofit organizations. Everything from information sharing to fundraising practices, the organizations that support them in that. There are other organizations that help them with their data systems and computer systems that they need to succeed. There are accountability organizations like ours. We help organizations know what they should do to be accountable to their donors and their constituents. And there are other organizations that educate and train leaders in nonprofits so that they can be successful. Well, one big piece of this that often goes, in my opinion, unrecognized is the financing opportunities for nonprofits. And what do I mean by that? Well, in many cases, nonprofits find that they are short on cash for a variety of reasons. It may be that the money that they need to raise for a particular project isn't in yet. They may have gotten a commitment from a funder to receive a grant, and that money is not available currently, but it's coming. They know it's coming, and they want to get the program started, but they don't have cash to do it. It could also be that they have a government grant. And we know how government grants sometimes require that they put money up front before they get reimbursed for those services. And that can create sometimes a gap in funding for organizations. And it could also be the loss of a grant. It could be loss of some funding. As we've seen during COVID, many organizations have fundraising programs that disappeared overnight because they weren't able to function. They weren't able to have these functions, particularly events when organizations were raising money. So there are lots of reasons why nonprofits find themselves in short-term or temporary cash stress, stressed for cash. So what do? Do you go to a bank? Well, that's certainly an option for the most well-heeled nonprofits, those that have, you know, millions of dollars in investments and other things that they can leverage with banks. And those who are wanting to borrow sums that banks are scaled to support. But what if you're a small to medium-sized nonprofit doing great work in a community and you have a gap in your cash needs? Where do you go? Well, fortunately, there is a network of community development banks. I'll call them in shorthand, and my guests will get into more about what they are, that are scaled to support organizations that are small and medium sized and to present loan opportunities to them. And we'll talk with our guest today, Mark Rand, who is the executive at American Nonprofits, to help us understand how these institutions work, where that funding comes from that enable them to do that work, and give our listeners a better understanding of how we're able to help nonprofits through these kinds of loan opportunities. So Mark, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Hello, it's so nice to be here. Thanks so much, Art.
So Mark, talk to us a bit about you I want to get into you just a minute and how you stumbled across such a unique opportunity to support nonprofit organizations.
That's very kind. I'll try to keep it brief because nobody wants to hear about me, but I'll keep it brief. So anyway, went to school, University of Delaware, near you, art, so yay, and fell in love with business, but also was learning Spanish at the time as well. So very focused on international, lived in Spain for a while and ended up with degrees in business and Spanish. Ended up working at a bank in Philadelphia called Core States, great bank, and was working there for 2 years during the what's called the Relationship Manager Development Program. So did that for 2 years and rotated around the bank. Great learning experience, and then stayed with the bank through a couple of different acquisitions and ended up in international corporate. So we were doing large transactions. I was the analyst. So some really interesting deals around the world. And so learned a lot and also learned that I did not want to be an international corporate banker, which was a good experience, and learned that, you know, 5 years into the experience, I was able to pivot. And so during that time, then it was like, okay, what can I, you know, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And so I knew I had this international backing and background. So it was either A, go back to school, B, you know, find that perfect job, or C, go to the Peace Corps. And I would ended up in Romania with the Peace Corps. And so there I had pretty much the perfect job, a great learning experience, and also further my career in nonprofit management, et cetera. So 2 years with an organization called CHF, which is a what's called a microfinance institution. And I was basically in charge of opening credit union. So about 30 people reported up to me, and we opened up 5 credit unions in Western Romania. A lot of a great team, great support. And it was incredible doing everything from, you know, buying a safe to speaking Romanian in front of 300 people, and also trying to build democracy as well. So it was an interesting time, 2 years of my life. Great experience. I think the Peace Corps calls it the toughest job you'll ever love. And I would say that was probably the toughest job I'd ever love. But we got them up and launched, and, you know, fancy awards and all of that with USAID and great mentors, including Jesse Fripp and others out there. Anyway, fast forward, while I was in Peace Corps, I met my partner, and he's from San Francisco. So when I finished Peace Corps, we moved to San Francisco, and ta-da, here I am today. So during that time, I worked at a foundation called Marin Community Foundation. So it's in California, right across the bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, from San Francisco is Marin County, beautiful. And so there I was in charge of basically launching their loan fund. They didn't call it PRI, they didn't call it impact investing back in the day. So we're talking about 2003-ish at this point. And I was there for a dozen years, also supported the affordable housing program. So I had grant making authority and then loans as well. So I did that for 12 years. Great experience. During that time, I linked up with another mentor, Pamela Davis, at NIAC, the Nonprofit Insurance Alliance of California. And Pamela asked me to look at creating a credit union for nonprofits in California. So that quickly idea was scuttled, but we said, hey, why don't we try and make a loan fund for nonprofits, especially the smaller nonprofits. So it was similar to what I was doing at Marin, but just on a smaller scale and statewide. In Marin, the loans were around $500,000 and only in one county. And in with NIAC, it was throughout the state. So, and the loans were about $50,000. So we were really focused in on these small nonprofits. So fast forward. So I left Marin Community Foundation, great experience again, then worked for a boutique organization doing impact investing. Interesting experience, launched my own company called Community Capital Advisors, where we work with foundations across the country trying to do impact investing, more on that later, and then also took the reins of American Nonprofits. So during this time, American Nonprofits was trying to figure out what we really wanted to do. And so long story short, we were trying to figure that out. And again, with a focus on finance, and that was my background, or is my background, and of course, nonprofits. So we launched what's called the Bridge to Bridge Fund. I was trying to figure out how to take the IP, the intellectual property from NIAC, copy paste over to American nonprofits with the, you know, direct support from NIAC, and saying, okay, you know, NIAC is an insurance provider. American nonprofits is really more of a financial organization. How can we take this model basically from NIAC that Pamela and I built and bring it over to American nonprofits and share that and try to expand and grow and support more nonprofits? So anyway, we were able to do that with the idea that we were going to supply small nonprofits, and when I say small nonprofits, really revenues of around $1.5 million and less, many times revenues of around $200,000. So some pretty small organizations. And those are the organizations I will say that American Nonprofits focuses on. And by that, I mean we provide technical assistance, which we can talk about and what that looks like, and then bridge loans as well. So
that's been
up and running. So we were doing the Bridge to Bridge Fund. That was successful. Yay. And then fast forward, started during the beginning of COVID, came up with this idea to team up with other lenders in the Bay Area that specifically focus on nonprofits, and launch a fund. And I'm giving you the 10-minute version, but there's a lot longer. So we launched what's called BayREF, the Bay Area Racial Equity Fund. And so the idea here is to provide organizations led by people of color, serving people of color with 0% financing and free technical assistance. And we did that with generous support from California Endowment and Stupski Foundation and Silicon Valley Community Foundation. So a lot of great partners working with Nonprofit Finance Fund and Community Vision as well. So
yeah, that's
I'll
just,
stop there. That's what we're running now.
First of all, that's a lot to unpack.
So you asked.
Listen, you've said so many things that said, we connect there. So let me just like run back through memory lane for a minute.
Yeah.
First of all, Philly, right? That's my hometown. And
there we go.
You went to the University of Delaware. Well, I went to a school that occasionally would compete against the University of Delaware, Franklin Marshall College. And you were a Division I school, and we were a Division III.
Oh, my gosh. You're talking out of my league. I don't
NCAA
know anything about
these,
sports, but go ahead.
All these pecking orders, but anyway. So,
so
we actually were able to compete and win against the University of Delaware, which is always a great thing, by the way. But Delaware's a great school, so let's start with that. That's the first connection. The second thing you mentioned is Core States Bank. As I was coming up in Philadelphia, Core States Bank was a giant in community support. They were everywhere. They supported institutions of all kinds. In fact, our nonprofit was able to get a line of credit through Core States Bank.
And, awesome.
It was terrific. The CEO at the time was Rosemary Greco.
Price. Yeah, Rosemary Greco, a previous nun.
Previous nun and school teacher. That's right. Rosemary Greco. And she was just everywhere. She was so wonderful. And, you know, it was rare to find a female CEO. And I guess it still is in our country for some reason. We're hopefully going to see more of them. But she was one of the early pioneers at the corporate level. And she was so down to earth, so great to be around and so supportive in so many ways. So she was wonderful. So we have that connection. You were probably at bank at the time, maybe in 90. She was there back in 97, I think.
Yeah, I was there. I started in 96.
Yeah. Yeah, so she would have still been there. Yeah. She left, I think, in 97. Then you mentioned the Peace Corps. Well, my daughter was a Peace Corps rep in Guatemala, also a Spanish speaker.
Great.
Spanish in college. And happens to be working in a bank now.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
She heads a program called 10,000 Small Businesses at Goldman Sachs. So she's doing the corporate philanthropy work out of Goldman Sachs, if you can believe it or not. So there's just
so many
relationships and possible connections here. And here we are, you know, now connecting over American nonprofits. But I just wanted to just say to you, this work that you're doing is under the radar. You know, most nonprofits don't even know that these kinds of organizations exist. And what you're trying to build here is so important, especially now.
Thank you.
And the reason I say especially now is that organizations are finding that they have to experiment more. They have to do things that they didn't used to do. And sometimes the funding is there. Sometimes it's not there. the money's out there, but they're going to, it's going to take them some time to figure out where it is. And they're going to need to take advantage of opportunities like yours. So let's talk for a minute about why American nonprofits fills a gap that maybe the banking institutions, more traditional banking institutions, are unable to fill.
Yeah, and not many people are in the American nonprofit space, and I'll break that down. So in terms of banks, for the most part, you nailed it, Art. Banks aren't really set up to support smaller nonprofits. If you're talking about SFMOMA, for sure. And I'm sure banks compete for those accounts and, you know, whatever. But with smaller nonprofits, banks aren't really set up. And that's for a variety of reasons. Number one, an organization doesn't really have collateral for the most part. Number two, they're not set up to do the reporting. The size of the loans are also tough too. So for example, an organization may need a, let's call it $100,000 line of credit, or a $50,000, or even a $25,000 line of credit. Banks are not set up to do $25,000 loans. They'll offer you a credit card, but for the most part, people, when you're applying as a person or a small business, you're not going for $25,000. You're going for much more. So they're just, the volume isn't there. It's expensive to do underwriting for a for-profit or a nonprofit. So banks, for the most part, aren't really serving the smaller nonprofits. There's also reputation risk too. Does Wells Fargo want to call default on a small nonprofit? No way. The reputation, even for Wells, will be tarnished. So definitely don't want to do that. So anyway, so then it's like, okay, so if the banking sector isn't there, who else is there? And I would say there's two other areas or two other sectors. One is foundations. Foundations are now starting to get hip to this whole idea of impact investing. So what does that look like? Foundations, many foundations that I work with will supply loans, low-cost loans to nonprofits, maybe from $100,000 to several million. Some foundations will do that. The code word is program-related investments, or PRI. So if you're looking for funding outside of grants, type in PRIs or program-related investments and ask your local foundation if they have a program. Anyway, so that's one piece. However, not every foundation has one, a PRI program. So where else do you go? So you alluded to this, but community development financial institutions, also known as CDFIs, are out there to provide financing for organizations. And what does that look like? So it could be a number of flavors. It could be affordable housing, or healthcare, or childcare, or it could be small businesses. So some of the biggies are like Nonprofit Finance Fund or Axion Opportunity Fund. So these organizations will make loans to either nonprofits or to small businesses. So Axion Opportunity Fund is one of the largest CDFIs in the country, and they'll make loans primarily to small business holders that have experienced challenges with the banking sector. They may not have all of the paperwork in order to qualify. They may have some bumps in their credit history, and many times that disqualifies them from traditional financing. So CDFIs then can provide that financing to a small business. With the nonprofits, though, so someone like Community Vision or Nonprofit Finance Fund will provide, or American nonprofits will provide financing for nonprofits. Now, what does that look like? That can look like a number of different colors and flavors as well. So, for example, again, a lot of nonprofits, or CDFIs rather, will make loans to affordable housing developers to build affordable housing. So that all makes sense. And you're talking about $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million bucks at a clip. So that's a lot of dough. That is not what we're talking about at American nonprofits. We're making loans from anywhere from $15,000 to $100,000. And my sense is, and we'll get into this, but my sense is that my understanding is that the nonprofits that we serve are not going to be able to apply to the larger CDFIs for funding, nor from foundations, nor from banks. So a lot of organizations, the leaders will put their debt on their personal credit card and pay whatever, 15, 18%. And that is bad business practices. So what we're trying to do is say, hey, we see you, we support you, we understand the nonprofit sector. How can we support you with low-cost loans and technical assistance?
So, Mark, where do you get your funding from to make these loans?
Great question.
You don't have like you're not a regular bank where you got people making deposits and all that. So
yeah, so great point. So we're able. So we receive generous support from NIAC, the Nonprofit Insurance Alliance of California, and I just have again to have to do a big shout out to them because they were the early investors and early believers in American nonprofits. And then we have loans from banks. So banks will provide loans to American nonprofits, and that interest rate changes, and it's anywhere from 6% to 4%. And then we take those funds and then we draw upon that loan capital to make loans to the nonprofits. Now, the trick is then if you're being charged 6%, you have to charge the borrower more than 6%. So we try to keep our costs as low as possible. For the most part, under Bridge to Bridge Fund, it's at 6%. So we're pretty thin on margins, as you can see, but we've also received generous support from foundations, including the California Endowment and Stupski Foundation, to essentially buy down our interest rate to 0% for organizations in the Bay Area of California that are led by people of color and serving people of color. So now we're able to provide all of this great financing at 0%, fantastic, which is unheard of.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow, we should see more of that. My goodness.
Well, yeah. And so right now, of course, the focus is on the Bay Area, but then how do we expand it to Southern California? How do we provide it to the Central Valley? How do we provide it to Maryland and Virginia? So that's the goal. I think what we need to do now is, you know, prove the model and raise awareness.
So how good are nonprofits for the loans?
Great question. So you would think like, oh my gosh, nonprofits, why are they applying for a loan? What's their risk profile? Like, what does that look like? For the most part, I would say nonprofits are very, very healthy. They have thin cash flows, but these folks know how to be nimble and change their business models quickly. And so knock on wood, we've seen a couple of defaults over the years, but we've made loans to, gosh, I want to say around 150 organizations. Some just ran out of gas. And we do deny a couple of loans a year. But for the most part, what we try to do is identify the leader, work with that leader, understand their concerns about the cash flow, help them hold their hand to build a cash flow too, because many of the nonprofits just haven't had that experience of putting together a 12-month cash flow projection, showing money coming in and money going out. What does that look like for your organization? So once we work with the nonprofit and can see how debt is going to be used and how it's going to be repaid, and we're all on the same page, then things are, you know, clear sailing. What distinguishes our organization amongst many things is we also provide loans that are collateral free. The organizations that we're working with don't have any collateral. A child care center does not have any real collateral. So we just say, look, you know, collateral free, it's unsecured, $50,000 here, straight amortization, and helps the executive director sleep at night, make sure there's cash in the bank so they can pay their employees, and it's usually a good relationship.
How long do the loans generally term? And I guess the other question is, when these loans are made, are the leaders coming in for a particular reason?
Yeah.
What are some of the reasons that they're borrowing?
So a typical loan is through American nonprofits is 6% interest unsecured for about 12 months. And so we do a straight amortization. So we'll say whatever, 50,000, 1 year, divide by 12, 6%, da-da-da. I think it's somewhere around like $3,800 or something, don't quote me, per month. And the organization will pay back. So that's that. But the organizations will come in and there's a request because they may have a reimbursable grant. So I think you alluded to the beginning. So an organization may say, okay, great, I just received this grant from the county of whatever, Alameda, and it's to do childcare, again, just to pick on childcare for whatever reason this morning. But they need to buy equipment, or they need to start running programs, and the contract says, we'll pay you in 30 days. Well, what typically happens is that the organization is not paid in 30 days. They're paid in 60 days or 90 days or 120 days. And that lack of cash flow coming into the organization will hurt that organization and put it at financial distress. The irony is, of course, that the federal government or the local government, in this case, is providing that funding to an organization. And of course, they want that organization to thrive, but they do not realize the financial harm that they are putting this organization into. So I have to believe that it's just an administrative nightmare or something's going on. It's that fault or that delay then requires the nonprofit to take out a loan. Where they're going to get a loan if it's not American nonprofit, I do not know. Again, sometimes credit cards, sometimes board members, which again is bad practice. And so you're then having to take out this loan and then pay interest on the loan because you're covering the government. And it's just like, wait a second, this is crazy. So that's one, reimbursable contracts. Two, sometimes there's a fundraising play. So they may say, okay, Art has said that he's a donor and he's going to provide $100,000, but it's going to be over 2 years. You know Art and da-da-da-da-da, so can we have a loan? And when Art's money comes in, then we'll use that to pay you off. So that's fine. And sometimes there's like a capital campaign. Sometimes organizations are also expanding or launching a new product or service and they just need more gas in the tank. So it's generally to cover accounts receivable. That accounts receivable, the higher accounts receivable climbs, the less cash. And sometimes those AR dollars don't come in, or sometimes they're just delayed. And that delay really hurts an organization.
Yeah. Mark, so if I am in the market for a particular loan, what type of underwriting am I going to have to go through?
Yeah, great question. So what we typically do is we'll pull your 990s and say, okay, Art, let's look at your 990s. And then we do what's called spreading them. So we'll go into the wonderful world of Excel and then do a year-on-year comparison and look at that and then say, okay, here's how you've trended. Are you profitable? You're not profitable. It's okay if you're not profitable. Well, what's the plan to become profitable? Or what's the story? Sometimes organizations have a lot of depreciation expense, which cuts into the profitability and may turn it unprofitable. But depreciation, of course, is a cashless expense. So anyway, so it's a kind of a fine art. Second point, especially with bridge loans, what we're really looking at is trying to say, okay, Art, what does your cash flow look like? Do you have sufficient cash? I know you need cash now, but do you have sufficient cash later on to pay off this loan? So we'll do a 12-month cash flow with you. If you're unaware about how to do that, then we have tools on AmericanNonprofits.org, and we can also, you know, hold your hand and do one together. And it's a great learning experience because then it's like, okay, great. Now I have this tool I can show to the board. I can show to my funders how their dollars leverage other dollars and how, you know, the health of the nonprofit looks. So it's a good tool. So then we'll take that, make sure you are able to pay back a loan. But we also, especially with the Bay Area Racial Equity Fund, we're also looking at what's called Underwriting 2.0. And what does that mean? That basically means what financial practices and underwriting practices exist, rightfully or wrongfully, that are racial and racial practices. So what does that look like? Why? So we're trying to learn from the field and trying to promote best practices around underwriting. And what does that look like? So for instance, your organization doesn't have collateral, or the collateral may be in an area that is not, you know, as developed as others, or whatever the case may be. But we're taking a hard look at identifying racism within the financial sector, and with a recognition too that more communities of color, whether they're organizations or people or whatever, are not able to access commercial debt or even debt from nonprofits. And why is that? Because I don't understand. And how are we taking all of these best practices that we learned as bankers and applying it to the nonprofit sector, but then also saying, wait a second, why are we requesting this appraisal, for instance, and why are we requesting the credit history of art, and you know, what happens with the credit history, and is there a reason behind the credit history? Is, you know, so really taking a hard look at our underwriting practices and trying to make sure that we are examining the role of debt and the role of each request for information that we have for your organization, and saying, are we having a bias towards an organization one way or the other, and a racial bias? I'm a white man. How is my unchecked racism showing up while underwriting? And so anyway, so not to go off on a tangent, but that's something that we're very focused on.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So let me shift a minute back to how you get funded. And I couldn't help but appreciate that banks fund you so that you can fund them. Are banks actually aware of these opportunities? And how difficult is it for you to say, convince a bank, hey, it's worth it to you to give me a loan at 3% so that I can lend it out to a whole bunch of nonprofits in our community that are doing good work? What case do you make to the banks to get them to release funds for you to do this?
So for the most part, banks are not making money on this, just to be clear. So they're not making money on American nonprofits. They're losing money on American nonprofits, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So, and not every bank is bad. You know, of course, banks are trying to figure this out, but they're just not set up to do the small nonprofits or even some of the larger nonprofits. So with the banks, so I'll go in, try to explain what we're doing. And I usually do like a lender landscape and say, hi, here are all the CDFIs and here are the nonprofits and here's, you know, all the banks. And, you know, there's this whole sector of nonprofits that no one is supporting. And here's the unique role that American Nonprofits is playing. So what I usually do is I go in and we'll then meet with what's called the CRA or Community Reinvestment Act folks and say, okay, here's, again, American Nonprofits, here's a unique service that we provide, et cetera. Are you able to make an investment into American Nonprofits? So, and that can look like a number of different structures. So usually there's a, you know, a quote unquote window through the Community Reinvestment Act or the foundation side of the bank. And then sometimes they'll provide either a loan or they'll provide a grant. Comerica Bank provided a generous grant to American Nonprofits, and others will provide, you know, both. So all is helpful. But some banks don't know. If you're, and also if you're a banker, you're typically focused on whatever it is, you know, international corporate banking or mortgages or whatever. You don't really work in the department that services nonprofits.
Sure, yeah. So let me ask you this one. Do we have any data on the need that nonprofits have for this type of funding? I mean, are there, we talked about the number, maybe there are organizations out there like yours who want to make the loans, but there are probably also nonprofits that need the money. I'm just trying to figure out if there is a gap right now. For instance, are there far more nonprofits that need the funding than you have to make loans, or is it lack of awareness? What's the situation right now that we're talking about?
Yeah, so I would say in general, there's a disconnect between the service providers and the nonprofits. So the service providers, so, you know, you try to explain what a CDFI is, or a community development financial institution, and you lose people, right? So there's already a disconnect. Talking about money and talking about loans, et cetera, that sometimes makes people, some people feel uncomfortable. Sometimes you also have staff that may not be experienced in debt or experienced borrowing, or you have a board above. The executive director understands the role of debt and needs debt to, you know, again, provide gas in the tank, but the board doesn't really fully comprehend. So sometimes there's just confusion at the organization level. Sometimes there's just CDFIs aren't reaching the nonprofits as well. Sometimes, so there's a little communication gap. Sometimes nonprofits are just like doing their thing and they just don't know where to turn. Or sometimes there's like a little translation thing going on too, or miscommunication about like, oh, hi, like here's, you know, a line of credit and this, it's going to help you with your, you know, leverage and operating, you know, margins and blah, 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 and your liquidity ratios and all of that. and you're just speaking a foreign language to a nonprofit. So you have to, in my experience, meet organizations where they are and hear from them. What's troubling them? How can we be supportive? We have some tools that may fit. Is this a match? So there's a communication piece that's definitely needed and sometimes is missing. Even at the large organizations, the large CDFIs, they'll tell you that sometimes working with the smaller or underserved nonprofits, there's a communication gap. So we try to take a different approach.
Well, look, Mark, I just got to tell you, you bring a lot of energy to this, and it looks like you're having fun doing it at the same time. So I want to call that out and just kind of say, how have you been able to persevere with this? I mean, your energy and your joy that it looks like doing this work really shines through. And I guess that's helped you persevere with it, because it's not always easy, right?
It's not always easy. No, but thank you. That's very kind of you, Art. So I would say, when you hear what's going on in the field, so American Nonprofits has made a loan to an organization in the Bay Area. And I think 5 years ago, the executive director and founder of the organization died. And this organization provides homes for vets, so homeless vets. So the program director for the organization stepped up and said, all right, I'll take the reins and try to figure this out. And this guy doesn't know anything about nonprofit management, or didn't know anything about nonprofit management, but yet he had the gumption and desire and ability to say, all right, this is a service that we need to provide these homeless vets. I'm going to take this on. And this guy's amazing. And so when we're able to connect with organizations like Metropolitan Fresh Homes or others, or that provide services to homeless vets, I mean, that's amazing. There's no reason, one, that there should be unhoused folks, number one, especially vets, especially women and kids and all of that. So when an organization and a gentleman stands up and says, look, I'm willing to take the reins, I know this is tough work, and you can be supportive of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, look, man, I really appreciate you jumping in this podcast with me today and enlightening us on the funding opportunities that are available to particularly small and medium-sized nonprofits in the Bay Area. And for those who are listening in other areas, I suggest you seek out community development organizations like this that will provide this kind of funding. I think you can see that it's a lot easier path than maybe going to some commercial institutions, as we've learned. And you're also going to be connecting with people who are also like you, loving the work.
Yeah.
They're embedded in the work that you're doing, the work of the sector. And that's also going to make your job, I think, a lot more doable and a lot more joyful. So to all our guests, let me just say thank you for listening to this episode with Mark Rand, the CEO of American Nonprofits. And if you want to hear other episodes, you can find us on all major podcast platforms. Please do subscribe, because that helps us build audience. And if you want to donate to the podcast, you can make a gift at givegive.org. Go to our website, give.org, and make a donation. Or you can also donate on Patreon. I hope you'll tune in next week for a new show. And I wish you all a great week. Thank you.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only, and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.